I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
As I welcome you back, let me tell you about two of my favorite restaurants in Houston. Liberty Kitchen in the Heights and Liberty Kitchen and Oysterette on San Felipe, now near the Galleria. Now, the Galleria location is different. It's got a tremendous raw bar there. Not that it doesn't have one in the Heights at Liberty Kitchen, but the raw bar there is excellent. There are fresh fish, oysters, gumbo, right on down to amazing steaks and burgers, clams as well. They're also serving breakfast on the weekends. Take it from me for an amazing dining experience. It's Liberty Kitchen and Liberty Kitchen Oysterette. LibertyKitchen.com, LibertyKitchenOysterette.com. Liberty Kitchen in the Heights has a little bit more of that Austin feel, and Liberty Kitchen and Oysterette on San Felipe, a little bit more of that uptown sort of Galleria feel. But two great restaurants, Liberty Kitchen and Liberty Kitchen Oysterette. All right, with that, we bring in who has been on the show a number of times, and we always appreciate his insight. He is ESPN FC soccer writer, Jeff Carlisle. Jeff, thank you for coming on the program.
Hey, no problem, Glenn. How are you?
Doing great. Great to have you on, and great to have you on from Canada. I just got back from a wonderful run in Vancouver. What an amazing city, and the great opportunity to be a part of the broadcasting team of this World Cup. It was wonderful. You're still there. You're getting set for semifinals. How about just your overall impressions on the way the event has been run by the host nation, Canada?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a good tournament. I think the venues, you know, obviously the turf issue is something that people are still going to talk about. But, I think by and large that the venues have been good. I just got back from Ottawa, and, I thought that was a really charming city. And they've got a new stadium there that I think was perfect for this event. Just in terms of the trends of the tournament, I think you have to start with the 24 teams, expanding from 16 to 24 teams. And there was a lot of worry that there were going to be a lot of blowouts, a lot of mismatches. And there were a few, but I think we even saw teams like Ecuador, improve from game to game and really start to get a feel for what the World Cup is about. And, I think that's a positive step for the women's game. And, now it's up to those federations to keep investing and keep putting money into those programs. Obviously France is out, but, you saw what can happen when a federation invests in its women's programs and the kind of players that it can produce. So, certainly that's a positive step as well, in my opinion.
He's Jeff Carlisle joining us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. The expanded field, obviously, has opened things up a little bit here. I guess the surprise team of the tournament's got to be now England. The women's game's expanding. Let's face it, as you mentioned, 4 to 5 years ago, we saw teams with great technique now marrying it with the physical side of the game. They've closed that gap. We have seen the likes of France, who technically years ago looked exceptional and now have added the strength and the power side of it. We've got emerging women's soccer nations now that are paying attention to physical aspects of the game, increased intensity of training sessions, volume of training sessions, getting their players in places where they get more competition. So this all bodes well for the women's game. Have we kept up our development here in the U.S.? And is the U.S. going to do a rethink after this, no matter what, whether they win it or not, Jeff?
I think they should. I mean, I think World Cups are always great opportunities to do a rethink, to really take stock of where the program is and the kind of players that it's developing. And certainly the U.S. team has come in for some criticism, you know, quite deserved, I think, for playing kind of a muscular, direct style. You know, now, obviously, you've got to come up with an approach, you know, tactically that's going to fit your team. But, you know, I think there's been a little bit of disappointment in the U.S. team just in terms of not really playing the ball on the ground and playing a technical style. And, you know, a lot of people seem to think that, you know, they do have the players to do that. And, you know, why hasn't Joe Ellis gone in that direction? So, you know, I do think there needs to be a rethink. I do think there needs to be more of an emphasis on technical players. You know, certainly Morgan Bryan is a big step in that direction. I thought she was excellent against China. And you know, certainly the emphasis ought to be on producing more players like that. And marrying that with the physical side as well, because obviously you need the complete package to compete at the international level.
Jeff Carlisle, ESPN FC writer, joining us here. I thought it was fascinating because the U.S. did not play well, though advanced and navigated the tournament, got to Colombia. To me, we're outplayed by Colombia up until the sending off of the Colombian goalkeeper. And then things obviously changed a little bit in the direction of the United States. But what I found really interesting, Jeff, and it's important for me to ask writers like yourself this. After that game, Jill Ellis kind of gave us a little bit of a Kool-Aid answer with, you know, everything was pretty rosy about this game against Colombia when it was obvious it wasn't. You got the result. That's generally what the American fans and public recognize solely. But what we saw was we saw people to take her to task on this. We saw the media take her to task, ex-players, fans. What it told me is that we're an emerging soccer nation and that winning is not only what we want to see anymore. And there are people that are going to be demanding and critical of the way the game is played. For me, this was all incredibly healthy.
Yeah, I would agree that there's some healthy pressure on the U.S. team. And, you know, just to kind of take that thought a step farther, you know, what was interesting was after the China game, you know, this was a result, you know, hey, where the U.S. won 1-0 against a team they were expected to beat, and the players were just over the moon. And it wasn't, I think, so much about the result as about the way they played. You know, they played high pressure. They were aggressive. You know, they took the game to the opposite, you know, team. And I think that's been missing from the first several games of this tournament. And, you know, it was just fascinating to kind of see the whole psychology of the team change and really turn around. So, yeah, there are big expectations on this team, not only to get results, but to win well.
All right, let's move on to some of the new stars, though, of this World Cup. And I think there were some players that were really introduced to the world. Switzerland's Ramona Bachmann. Let's go to Cameroon. I'm just giving some examples here. Gael Nganamut. There was just a number of incredibly interesting players that I don't think a lot of people knew about that have now sort of used the platform of the Women's World Cup to identify themselves to the world.
Absolutely. I thought Nganamut was a real force. And, you know, just she's just so talented. And but it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's, you know, this is, you hope that this is just the beginning, that it's not the end. It's not the last time we see some of these players and that some of these federations, again, continue to invest and try to find, you know, these diamonds in the rough. And, you know, the U.S. has had some breakout players as well. You know, Julie Johnston has certainly been a real find. And I mean, Jill Ellis almost found her by accident. It, you know, it wasn't until Christy Rampone got injured and Whitney Engen as well that Julie Johnston got her chance.
Let's move on and continue on the Julie Johnston because she didn't set a foot wrong against China. I thought, Jeff, she was exceptional. Her timing, her decision making. She's obviously a real danger on set pieces as well.
Absolutely. You know, in fact, she probably feels that she could have done a little bit better on some of those set pieces. You know, she had that one free header that went off frame. But, you know, I think that the two center backs, both her and Becky Sauerbrunn, have been just unbelievable. I mean, they've been lights out. Just the timing of their tackles, their decision-making. You know, obviously there's the occasional hiccup for both. I mean, that's going to happen to any player. But, you know, so much of what they've done and decided to do has been right. And it's really provided an amazing platform for the U.S. team, you know, during a tournament where offensively, you know, they have struggled, and certainly they've been able to draw some confidence from the fact that their defense, and in particular the two center backs, are playing so well.
He's Jeff Carlisle, ESPN FC soccer writer, joining us here. Switching gears to the men's national team. put in context the U.S. results over the Netherlands and Germany, because here in America we are excellent at conditioning any results that we get in soccer. Talk to me about those two results and what they mean from a confidence standpoint for Jurgen Klinsmann in the U.S.
I think they're huge from a confidence standpoint. I mean, anytime you can go on the road and play teams of that caliber and come out with two wins, you have to chalk it up as a really good week for U.S. soccer and for the men's team. Some very young players came through. I'm thinking of, you know, Jordan Morris and Bobby Wood and those guys. And obviously, you know, we saw Michael Bradley really, really start to make this team his own. I mean, he showed flashes of that in the past, but, you know, then he kind of suffered through a middling World Cup by his standards. And so I think it's also a positive sign that he's really starting to take over this team, especially in the absence of guys like Clint Dempsey and Jose Altidore. So, you do have to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, these were friendlies. The U.S. has gotten big results in friendlies before. So, it's not a reason to go completely overboard in terms of enthusiasm, but, it's another positive step and certainly a sign that, you know, hey, Jurgen Klinsmann is starting to deliver on some of his promises, you know, in terms of his style of play.
Yeah, and these are not necessarily ordinary friendlies because they are played in the Netherlands and Germany, and I don't think 50,000 Germans came out to see the World Cup holders lose to the United States of all teams. Why do we condition things so much in this country? Why can't we just look at that game and take the positive out of it? And why do we have to condition these results all the time? Without a doubt, anybody who knows soccer and development of players and teams understands that playing Germany in front of 50,000 people and taking the alternative, which is winning to losing, is not a bad thing.
Absolutely. But, you know, I also think, you know, the World Cup and major, you know, the international tournaments, you know, I mean, obviously the Confederations Cup is a little bit less prestigious, you know, to be sure. But, you know, that's really where the ultimate test is. And, you know, I still think that the U.S. has not quite had that big moment in a World Cup where, you know, they've gotten just that wow result against an Argentina or a Germany. So I think maybe that's why the U.S., you know, fan base and media base to an extent kind of conditions themselves when they see these kinds of results. It's like, hey, we've seen it on this stage. Now let's see it on the biggest stage. So I think that's why people are holding back a little bit.
Does our fan base and the media understand that we compete against the world? Not that that's an excuse.
I think so. Just the notoriety and the attention that the last few World Cups have gotten, I think definitely, people do understand that the U.S. national team, both men and women, do compete against the rest of the world. And the U.S. sporting public has seen that with the Olympics as well, but, in terms of just competing against the rest of the world. But obviously, you know, maybe what's not understood is kind of how the rest of the world had a significant head start, certainly on the men's side in terms of the development of the game. So, maybe that's kind of the missing nugget of information there. But I think by and large, most people do understand that it's a worldwide sport that's competed on, you know, the biggest possible stage that you can think of.
You talked about the Stanford striker as well, Jordan Morris, who, you know, when he got picked for the national team, everybody went ballistic. What does that say about all the other strikers in MLS? I mean, it was a great talking point for debate. But the fact is coaches have preferences. Klinsmann had a preference with him, and it seems like the preference of Jordan Morris and the instinct of Klinsmann as a former striker to pick this kid has been a pretty good one.
Yes, so far. But certainly there have been other strikers who have kind of burst onto the scene and flamed out a little bit. My impression of Jordan Morris so far is that he's a very level-headed kid. I think he has a very good understanding of where he's at presently and where he needs to get to. But I think, you know, kind of like with the team in general, there's a little bit of holding back. There's a little bit of a wait and see attitude. You know, certainly you look at the problems that Julian Green has had, you know, since the World Cup. I mean, a guy like Juan Agudelo has had his ups and downs. You know, now it looks like his career is back on track again. So I can kind of understand the reticence a little bit, you know, when a guy like Jordan Morris bursts on the scene. But so far, just his game, his attitude. He doesn't show any fear out there. You know, he looks like a guy that belongs. And so I think for him, you know, let's see what he does with the Olympic team and how well they can fare and hopefully qualify for the Olympics and kind of get over that bad taste that was left in qualifying for 2012.
Yeah, he certainly has had the opportunity to be in some high-profile games. Jordan Morris also played for the U.S. against Mexico in front of 60,000 fans in San Antonio. Rivalry week in Major League Soccer, Jeff, produced some pretty darn good games. Let's start with New York City FC and the Red Bulls. A game of two halves, no doubt about it. But more importantly, just maybe the birth of a wonderful, separated by 14 miles, a wonderful rivalry in New York. So Don Garber kept saying, look, it's essential for us to get a second team in New York. Right now, he's looking like a very, very smart man here.
He is. And, you know, I think it's the latest in a series of smart decisions that MLS has made in terms of trying to foster these rivalries. I mean, you go back to the addition of teams, you know, first in Seattle and then, you know, adding Vancouver and Portland. I mean, I think that, you know, certainly, you know, I don't want to say planted a seed, but it basically highlighted, you know, how important rivalries can be to a league like MLS. And, you know, certainly there are a lot of components, I think, that go into a good rivalry. It can't just be proximity. It's got to be, you know, games in the playoffs that matter, that you know, controversial incidents that you know, leave fans bitter for a little bit there and you know, only to see what happens the next time. So, but I think it's, you know, it was great to see all those fans in Yankee Stadium, and they were certainly the home, the quote unquote home side went home a little bit disappointed. But, you know, it was a great spectacle, and that's, you know, those are the kinds of moments that MLS needs as it continues to grow.
Jeff, as always, we thank you so much for coming on the program. Great insight. Continue to enjoy the Women's World Cup in Montreal and up in Canada, and we'll look forward to having you on the program again.
Absolutely. Anytime, Glenn.
All right. He's the one and only ESPN FC writer, Jeff Carlisle. We thank him for coming on the program. As we hit break here, a quick word here on the Gold Cup. International soccer, as you know, is returning to Houston. It comes in a lot of different forms and shapes this summer. You got Mexico against Honduras this Wednesday. The CONCACAF Gold Cup comes to BBVA Compass Stadium. Doubleheader beginning at 5:30. Jamaica, Canada, then Costa Rica, El Salvador. This is July 11th. Gold Cup takes place every 2 years. Tickets, $33. It's two games, don't forget. So cut that in half. It's a pretty darn good sporting value. For more information on tickets, visit www.goldcup.org or the bbvacompassstadium.com internet website, or go to the ticket box office. We take a break. We've got a lot more to go here on this show.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the Gau Studios in Houston. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, Soccer Matters rolls on here on ESPN 97.5. Let me tell you about two of my favorite restaurants in Houston, Liberty Kitchen in the Heights and Liberty Kitchen and Oysterette on San Felipe near the Galleria. You're going to find award-winning chefs there. We've had them in the studio here a number of times. Travis Lenig has been in here serving up some incredible ceviches. They got beautiful raw bars at the Liberty Kitchen and Oysterette, plus smoked salmon at Liberty Kitchen in the Heights. Fresh fish, oysters, gumbo, right on down to amazing steaks and burgers. My good friend Carl Eves, involved with the Houston Football Association, one of the owners of the restaurant. It's libertykitchen.com. Bud Light, the official beer of the Dynamo, the Mexican national team, reminding you to get down to BBVA Compass Stadium to take in the Gold Cup. You can get tickets for the Gold Cup at bbvacompassstadium.com. Bud Light reminds you, support the game of soccer live. Get out to stadiums and be a part of the like-minded individuals that are supporting the international game and the Dynamo. Bud Light, the official beer of the CONCACAF Gold Cup. And with that, we reach back to, one of the great professional soccer players in Houston soccer history. He played for both the old Houston Dynamos in the 80s and also for the Continental Indoor Soccer League Houston Hotshots. You know him as Beto. He has done a tremendous amount of work also here in the youth community in Houston. Beto, how are you?
Doing fine, Glenn. Nice to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, and thank you very much for taking the time out, because we're talking to Beto right now. He's on the ground in downtown Los Angeles working for the Red Cross, doing soccer clinics for inner-city kids. You know, before we get into some other things, Beto, just talk about the importance of soccer and getting connected to the inner-city youth.
Well, you know, Glenn, first of all, you know, for me, you know, being involved in soccer all my life, you know, I remember myself as a youth kid in Brazil, you know, the need to get a place to go out and play soccer and to stay away from the street, you know. For me, this is very good for me to do this, to help those kids that need it. And actually from those kids, you can find some talents too, you know, and that's also the reason I'm trying to help those kids, to see if I can find any talent and take to the club and help for those kids in the future have a chance to play professional or maybe go to college.
Beto, are there many females in the youth groups that are in the inner city? Are the young ladies in the inner city wanting to play the game?
Oh, no, yes. We have a half. Yeah, boys and girls here. Actually, we have about 60 kids, and actually half and half is boys and girls, yes.
Yeah, because it's interesting. Out of the World Cup, people are talking about the U.S. Women's National Team and somehow inducing more diversity through more connection in the inner city. But I know there are a number of programs going on there as well. Beto joining us here. By the way, yes, you do know him as the uncle of Giovanni Dos Santos, but Beto's game stood on its own. It might not have gotten the publicity of his nephew, but he was a tremendous player and played on the Houston Dynamos, and I was fortunate to play close to him on the field. How about your nephew, Gio? It must be fun for you and your brother, Zizinho, who was also a pro at Club America, to follow the career of Gio and all the success that he's had.
Oh, that's great. You know, I enjoy every minute, you know, every game he plays, doesn't matter where I'm there on TV and trying to make sure, you know, he's doing well. You know, and he has been doing well lately, especially when he went to Villarreal, has been playing, you know, a lot of minutes there. And that's been helping him, you know, with his confidence. And the same with Jonathan, you know, that's been playing together, the two brothers of Villarreal. So, you know, so that's very good for a family, you know, have the two brothers playing the same team.
You know, is there a concern? You know, I have a niece that was is a model that was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. My biggest concern as an uncle, and you're an uncle too, is how she manages all this and, you know, stays protected and takes care of her career, and you hope people are going to navigate this fame, which I can't comprehend it. I can only comprehend it as an uncle. How has Gio handled his, you know, pretty much global fame? And in the same vein, you could say Jonathan as well.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy, the career, but you know, my brother, you know, of course, Gio always there. Doesn't matter where he goes, Gio is there. Make sure he's doing the right things, you know. It's hard to be 24 hours with them, but they're professional. You know, they're going to do mistakes in life and things like that. But I think right now he has been, I think, in the best, you know, in terms of mature, you know, as a person and as a player. And but it's not easy. It's not easy, but like I say, you know, those people there is there to show what you're supposed to do the best.
Yeah, and I've found out through my niece Hannah that, you know, there's all kinds of things on the internet that are untruths, you know, and it can be a little bit bothersome. I mean, I don't care if it's me, but when it's my niece, it's a different story. So, you know, it's all something that has to be navigated by a family as well.
Yes, correct. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Let's go to Gio, because, you know, there have been rumors of him and Chicharito and MLS making overtures to them, trying to bring them to the league. We all know, based on the relationship with Soccer United Marketing, the importance of Mexico here, the changing demographic. These two guys would be instant stars here. We do know that. Do you ever think Gio could come to Major League Soccer? The Dynamo have made overtures to him a couple years back, and the league has. I'm sure they have been over the course of a few years, but do you ever think the move to Major League Soccer would be right for Gio Dos Santos and or Jonathan?
Probably not right now. To be honest, I think in the future they will come to the United States. Actually, one of my nephews that I was living with them there for 4 months, he came back. He's in Brazil. He told me that actually Gio wants to come to the United States. Actually, he said that. But my brother told that he's still too young to come over here, you know, but Gio actually, he does want to come to United States.
Yeah, so someday it could happen. And the playing style, you know, you, your brother, you're all very technical players. I mean, I was fortunate to be a, you know, I was like a golden retriever. Go get the ball and give it to Beto DeSantos, which made me very comfortable because a lot of times I only had to make a 10-yard pass. But, you know, the technical side of all the players in your family is straight on down to your nephews. It's pretty remarkable, but I guess we have to trace it back to the Brazilian culture.
Yes, you know, I would think so. You know, I know Gio, you know, has the Brazilian blood, you know, and I remember him when I was 7 years old, the way he touched the ball, what he used to do with the ball was amazing, you know. The same with Jonathan. Those kids used to live and sleep with the soccer ball, you know, always trying to do something different with the ball, you know. But, yeah, they do, you know, thank the part. They, you know, they have been working on and get better and better and better.
He's Beto DeSantos, played in the 80s for the Houston Dynamos, plural with an S here in Houston, and also the Houston Hotshots of the Continental Indoor Soccer League. With all the work, Beto, and you've done a lot of tireless work in the youth community, you've done it for the right reasons. You've also, in many cases, have donated your time, like right now, to the Red Cross in downtown Los Angeles. Do we sometimes overcoach the youth player? Do we not give them enough freedom to be creative based on this desire as Americans to get results?
I agree. I think sometimes we overcoach the kids. You know, we need, you know, they need to learn how to make decisions by themselves. That's how they're going to become a better player. Because I think it's really important, you know, as an individual player, you know, we go practice, we do all the work, we show them things like that. So now they need to go to the games and be able to do it, to apply it to the game goals. But if a coach is always coaching, telling what to do, they in their mind, they're always going to wait for the coach or parents to say something to the kid. And they have to be able to make decision by themselves. You know, like you know, like I told you about my life. When I was 11 years old, I was already living by myself in the Santos dorm when I was 11. So I didn't have my parents, nothing telling me what to do. And the coaches, you know, we go and play and let you know, they let you do, you know, whatever come in your mind, you know. So you have to do the decision by yourself.
He's Beto DeSantos, and by the way, when you came to the United States, I guess you were 20 years old from Club America. You came to the Houston Dynamo. You were living in an apartment next to me, and I mean, what a testament to you! I mean, you had to learn an entirely new language. This had to be pretty difficult for you, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, no, not easy. You know, first I had to learn Spanish, and then I came to the United States. I had no idea how I will deal with the, you know, with the players, and it's hard because it's not just American players. You have out there, you have English players, players from Australia, players from all over that has a different accent. So it's very, very, very difficult, you know. But you just need to go there and you know, just go and try to do the way you know how to do it with your body language there, show what you want, and go from there. And, but I have a friends, you know, including you, that helped me with my English, you know, and all the other friends that I was able to, you know, to be able to learn the English, you know.
Well, I knew how good a player you were. I was like, we got to make this guy happy. He's got to be happy. We got to help him with English. But you also had the league MVP at the time, a player that we don't talk enough about down here in Houston in past history, Jose Neto, who was a league MVP, and then Manny Neves. Both could speak Portuguese, and that made it an easier transition for you, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, that was easy. Yeah, I forget those two guys. Yeah, one from Portugal and the other from Brazil. Yeah, that made it easy, too. Yeah, so that helped. Always helped, but it's not easy for people that come or go to other countries that speak the language, you know. And, you know, just not the language, but also the culture, the way, you know, the food and all that, you know, you have to get adjusted for it. So those are the things.
Yeah, we were a little bit of ahead of our time when it comes from the timing perspective of the growth of the sport. And, of course, we're playing in high school stadiums and NFL stadiums on a lot of artificial surface. Are you just amazed, maybe like I am, where the infrastructure of the sport has come, where the attention from the media and social media, more fans? Or are you pretty amazed these days at where the sport has come since the days we were playing?
it's amazing, you know, just to see those beautiful stadium, you know, and the support of the people is just, you know, every time I turn the TV, I see the stadiums and the you know, the people is, wow. You know, you go back in the day, you know, it wasn't nothing compared, you know, and I think it's even getting even better, especially with the players coming to and more staying, you know, like the one they're going to be building here in Los Angeles. You know, it's something that I say, wow, you know, so definitely that's, you know, why people now wants to come in and play in the MLS to the other players from other countries, you know.
Well, we saw yesterday 47,000 people at Yankee Stadium for New York City FC against the New York Red Bulls, two teams that are separated by about 13 miles. The Red Bulls play in New Jersey. I got to think that LAFC, they're obviously going to probably look to get some star quality. I only think that can be a positive for the LA Galaxy, increased competition in your own backyard.
Oh, yeah, that'll be great here for the city. You know, have the two teams over here. And especially the community that we have, all the Spanish kids over here, that will be amazing. I'm sure those stadiums are going to be packed over here, you know?
Well, Beto, listen, I'm going to let you get back to work. I know you're downtown and you're doing great work with youth. Keep that up. You've always been a real giver back when it comes to the game of soccer at the youth level. Thank you for that. You're a gentleman. You were an excellent soccer player, and we appreciate having you on the show. You're legendary here in Houston for your play as a pro, but also for the work you did in our youth community as well.
No, Glenn, thank you for having me in your show, and like, always it's a pleasure to talk with you, and I wish you the best, okay, and then also the best for the Houston community there.
Sounds good, Beto. And by the way, I told you I'll be out in L.A. a number of times here in July, so we're definitely getting together, okay?
Definitely. We're waiting for you, my friend, okay?
You got it. That's Beto DeSantos.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Outstanding player, Houston Hotshots, Houston Dynamos, and, of course, many of you know him as the uncle to Gio DeSantos and Jonathan DeSantos, who both are at Villarreal. And, of course, Gio Wednesday night here in Houston when Mexico comes to town. All right. Quick word here, 7-Up, great solo or as a mixer. 7-Up, enjoy the crisp, clean taste of 7-Up. It delivers more of the natural lemon-lime flavor you love. No caffeine, 100% natural flavors. 7-Up, always refreshing. Don't forget 7-Up 10 has the full flavor of 7-Up with only 10 calories. Finally, the perfect 10. Of course, Daspit Law Firm working for you 24-7, the Houston personal injury attorneys. They handle personal injury cases from plant and refinery accidents, medical injury accidents, 18-wheelers, right down to boat and car. It's DaspitLaw.com. It's John Daspit, his firm. And we appreciate John and Daspit Law getting behind soccer on the radio. 713-364-0915, DaspitLaw.com. You can also contact them toll-free, 888-273-1045 in English and Spanish. Soccer Matters, thanks. The Daspit Law Firm. We'll take a break here. More to come. The best in soccer talk.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the Gao Studios in Houston. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back, everybody. The Daspit Law Firm working for you 24/7. Houston personal injury attorneys. They handle personal injury cases from plant and refinery accidents, medical injuries, industrial accidents, 18-wheeler accidents, right down to car and boat. It's DaspitLaw.com. 713-364-0915. Now, when you get in a situation that needs a lawyer, well, they're the ones for you, Daspit Law Firm. In times of stress, depending on the circumstances of your accident, you need a hard-hitting personal injury attorney on your side to fight for your right for compensation. Contact the Daspit Law Firm, 713-364-0915, 888-273-1045 in English and Spanish. Our thanks to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. With that, we bring in a former Houston Dynamo. You can also catch him on ESPN FC and also doing games along with Fernando Palomo, the maestro. He is Alejandro Moreno. Alejandro, thank you for coming on the show.
What's going on, Glenn? How are you? Always great to be with you.
Yeah, good to be with you. I got to tell you, you're really taken to the whole media side of things. As we just talked about here off air, you really are enjoying what you do.
Well, otherwise it becomes a job, Glenn. So I try to. I know very clearly that I'm not doing heart surgery. I'm not doing rocket science. So I try to enjoy what we do and try to translate that into material that people can be interested in and can be engaged with. And if we do that and we tell a story on air, then I think we're doing a good job of it.
He's Alejandro Moreno, former Dynamo, former Major League Soccer player, won MLS Cups. Also, you can catch him on ESPN FC. Tell me sort of the routine, where you're living, you know, how it works when you go up to ESPN, because I've been on campus there calling a couple World Cups in the past. I'm just curious how it works for you.
Well, initially I was living in Philadelphia, and I was doing the commentary for the Philadelphia Union and doing the weekly trips here to Bristol, Connecticut. But as those trips became more often than it was originally expected, then I decided that it was best for me to move the family up here to Connecticut. And rather than spending time with the family, I was spending time in the New Jersey Turnpike. And for anybody who's been on the New Jersey Turnpike, that's not a lot of fun. So I decided that it was best to move the family up here, and so now I'm on call here in ESPN. So whenever something breaks, whenever something happens, whenever somebody does something stupid, I'm on the end of the other line and trying to have a reaction on it.
Alejandro, how far do you live from the studios, and how do you like Connecticut?
I'm about 25 minutes out, and so I'm just right down the street, and it comes quite handy as I'm always available, and when things are, things like FIFA, for example, that broke, and it was crazy times, and it was just kind of everybody scrambling around trying to figure out what was going on, then that gave me the opportunity to come and participate in SportsCenter and trying to break down what was a very important moment in soccer at the time. And as far as living in Connecticut, well, I tell you what, it's cooler than Houston.
Yes.
However, I do not enjoy the snow all that much. I mean, there wasn't much snow growing up in Caracas, Venezuela, as you may very well know. So, it's interesting. It makes it for an interesting lifestyle, one that I'm not particularly used to. But you just kind of make the best of it, and the family's enjoying it. It's a great place to raise a family, and so we're all excited about what the future holds for all of us.
All right, you've played for Venezuela. You've played in Copa Americas. Talk a little bit about Venezuela in the Copa America this year in Chile, and then also just talk a little bit about where Venezuelan football is right now.
Yeah, it was after starting off Copa America, beating Colombia 1-0 in that first game, then the expectations went out the roof, and it was. It was fair to expect a lot from the Venezuelan national team, given the success that my group had in 2011, where we made it all the way to the semifinals. So you set a standard for yourself, and you hope that you can replicate that, although you also know that it's very difficult to get there. But once you win that first game, you think to yourself that those 3 points will allow you to get through onto the second round. And when you fail to do so, then obviously you have not realized the objective, and you have not been able to accomplish the thing that you set for yourself. So that in itself was disappointing to watch, was disappointing to see. As far as the state of Venezuelan soccer as a whole, it's in transition. It's a new head coach. It's a new administration. The president of our federation was one of the names indicted in the FIFA investigation. So, of course, that brings a lot of uncertainty as to what the future holds. But in the end, it's about the players on the field. And can those guys coming up on World Cup qualifiers that start very soon in South America, can they rally around each other and put together performances that they can be proud of and give Venezuela their first trip to the World Cup? That's the goal, and hopefully that's something that becomes a reality at some point.
Let's switch gears to a little bit more on the Copa America, and obviously we saw Brazil get knocked out to Paraguay on penalties after producing a pretty early goal in that game. Is the fear factor gone in Brazil? Talk to me about Brazilian soccer right now. Is the fear factor gone?
Growing up, and I'll take you back to what the reality was in Venezuela 15, 20 years ago, is that since there was no option for Venezuela to be successful, Venezuelan people had a tendency of rooting for Brazil because that was the team that was always favored to win something. And that has changed. it really has, and more so, and people are going to criticize Dunga, and like they criticized Scolari in the World Cup, and like that, they have criticized coaches in the past. But I think if I'm a Brazilian fan, the one thing that I'm really concerned about is the fact that I look at the players on the field, in particular in the final third, and there are no stars. Outside of Neymar, there is no player there that you really fear. Roberto Firmino is not a guy you fear. Diego Tardelli is not a guy that you fear. Go back to the World Cup, Fred and Joe, those are guys that you clearly don't fear. And then you compare that to teams of the past of Brazil, and we'll go into history of Brazil, and you know, we'll talk about players like Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, and Rivaldo. Well, those guys are not walking through that door. Romario and Bebeto, they're not walking through that door. We can even go as far back as Rivelino, Jairzinho, Garrincha, Pelé. Those guys are definitely not walking through that door. And
Socrates.
Yes, Socrates, geniuses of the game, Zico. I mean, you go on and on. So you can come up with all sorts of names. And Brazil right now does not have those kind of players.
So what is happening? It's a great point. What is happening? Why are they not producing that volume of highly technical, game-changing players now?
You know, Glenn, at some point, I think what has happened is Brazil continues to be an exporting country of players, but it's not the same quality of player. Anywhere that you go around the world, if a Venezuelan player shows up and a Brazilian player shows up and they have comparable resumes, and maybe the Venezuelan player even has a better resume, but the other guy is Brazilian, he's going to get a better look. That's reality. That's fact, and that has happened in the past because of what Brazil was perceived to be in the past. Now, the reality is that same Brazilian guy may get the chance to play at a high level, and it's not performing nearly as well as you might have thought. I just think that the product right now in Brazil is diluted in terms of the players and in terms of quality of players. It's a lot of numbers, and it's a lot of quantity, but it's not enough quality, not as compared to other players. And we're not comparing to other countries in the world. We're comparing to Brazil and the history of Brazil, and that is a very, very high standard. Up to that standard, this team is nowhere near.
Yeah, it is pretty fascinating to see them look like an ordinary commoner amongst everybody else. Who is the one country that you think is the most up-and-coming right now? Outside of Argentina, obviously, who's a traditionalist. Is it Colombia right now in South America? Who is it for you?
I would have told you prior to Copa America that it had to be Colombia, given their performance in the World Cups and what we saw from James Rodriguez and from Cuadrado, the potential of Jackson Martinez and even a guy like Carlos Vaca. You thought, okay, this is a team that is really ready to take that next step and be a prime contender in South America. But they did not play very well in this Copa America. In particular, I don't mind so much what James Rodriguez has done, because if anybody tried to do something creative for Colombia in this tournament, it was James Rodriguez. But Cuadrado was simply disappointing. We saw him in the World Cup getting to the end line, crossing the ball, getting in behind with in-to-out runs, out-to-in runs, movement, dynamic with the ball, without the ball. We didn't see any of that in the Copa America, and that made it disappointing. We don't know what's happening with Radamel Falcao. Is he done? He certainly looks like he's done, but I hate to believe that a guy that just a couple of years ago was scoring goals for fun for Atletico Madrid, and now all of a sudden cannot even trap a ball correctly. So Colombia still remains to me the team that is up and coming, but those guys, those key players, they have to deliver. They don't have the luxury of an Argentina that, look, if Agüero is not performing, you bring in Tevez. If Tevez is not performing, then you bring in Higuain. Colombia doesn't quite have that sort of depth. So they need their prime guys to be performing at a first-class level and not at a level that we've seen from Cuadrado, Falcao, and a couple of the other guys in that starting 11.
Now, how much do we factor in, Alejandro, just a hangover from the brutal club season these guys produce in? I know it's not an excuse, but let's face it, these guys are stretched to the maximum physically and mentally. Does that play a part in maybe subpar performances in Copa America and maybe to the point where you're talking about Colombia?
I guess you can make that argument, Glenn, but I'll give you one name Lionel Messi. Nobody played any longer than him. Nobody played any longer than him in the European season. He went all the way to the Champions League final. And you look at him, and he's still playing at a high level. In fact, he looked like a piñata against Colombia. Colombia was just hit him all over the place. He was running circles around some of the Colombian defenders. You can use it as an excuse, or you can use Copa America as a stepping stone. A lot of guys that do well in Copa America, they end up showing themselves to the rest of the world. You do well in that sort of tournament, now you cash in into a life-changing sort of contract. So while I understand that some of these guys may be tired from the European season, a guy like Radamel Falcao had no option to be tired from the European season because he wasn't playing. So he had to use this tournament for something important to him and that he had to perform well, and he didn't. A guy like Cuadrado did not get minutes with Chelsea, so here's a guy that gets an opportunity now with his national team. And what you see is a hangover of a guy that hasn't had continuity and consistent minutes on the field with his club team, and now you try to turn the switch on at the national team level, and it just doesn't work that way.
Alejandro, listen, great stuff on Copa America. As always, we really appreciate you being on. And, of course, continued success in all that you're doing on radio and TV. And let's get you on again real soon here.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Always a pleasure. And, of course, I wanted to say hi to all the fans over there, the Houston Dynamo. While I was there, people treated me quite nicely. So I appreciate them very much.
Alejandro Moreno, a member of the MLS Cup-winning Houston Dynamo, also on ESPN FC. You can catch him tons all over the place on television. Also calls a lot of the Mexico games. Alejandro, again, thank you very much. That'll do it for Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A big thank you to the listener and those of you who contribute to this show. We appreciate you helping move the sport of soccer forward. A couple of quick reminders here before we get off the air tonight. It is Mexico-Honduras tomorrow night at Energy Stadium. Your tickets can be purchased at Ticketmaster. And then July 11th, it's the Gold Cup doubleheader down at BBVA Compass Stadium. You can get your tickets there as well. And for all of you who listened in tonight, thank you very much. It's Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. And over on Facebook, it's Soccer Matters. Get the podcast on iTunes or at ESPN975.com. Good night, everyone.